I'm calling the meeting to order. We now do have a quorum. And we have two bills on the agenda today, and we're also going to have a discussion with another member who is asked to talk with the committee. I just talked with us about a bill that's in this committee, but that we're not hearing from. Ms. Orr will be here. Let me start by suggesting, first of all, and I want to share with committee members and with folks who are here, that the two bills that Representative Walker and Representative Lane are both sponsors of, we have some conversations together about the bills and the issues that are addressed in them, which are important to look at issues of homelessness and how the system is working. And I've also talked with Senator Marty about this, and Beth has. And what we've agreed to do is to table these two bills for today and to come back during the interim and actually discuss the issues that are involved and try to see if we can come up with a plan rather than actually go forward with the actual bills today. And one of our authors is with us. Both of our authors are with us, Representative Walker and Representative Lane, and they are part of making this decision. And so, members, I just wanted to let you know that's what we'll be doing with those first two bills, with your agreement. And then we'll, over the interim, if any of you are interested, you can be part of that discussion. And we'll come back next session with actually a plan to address the concerns. Representative Walker, did you want to say anything?
Thank you for putting it on the agenda this morning and making sure that all interested parties know that there is an interest in resolving something and looking at it. While the data collected is still quite new and it's still in the infancy stages, you know, wanting to make sure that we're doing it the best way, the most efficiently, not just for the providers, but most importantly for the individuals that are being asked the questions. And so if there is a way to tailor it down, that will be helpful to make sure it's more efficient, but also making sure that we know what we're getting from having so many different categories while we're collecting this data would be helpful, too. So I appreciate your willingness to look at this further.
Okay. Why don't we act on your bill first, then? House Bill 3804. The chair moved that we laid it on the table. Any discussion? Not then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
And Representative Walker, I just want to say, I know you're going to be moving us, but this summer maybe you can help us with this. So if we could prevail on you to join us for some of those meetings.
Madam Chair, there's a couple things I can do. While you guys are busy doing your other things, I'll have plenty of time to work on a couple minor projects. Getting ready for y'all next year's projects to do. You know, I have about five in mind.
Okay.
And I wanted to pass on this one in 2009 so I can work on this one too.
Great. Thank you so much. Representative Lane, the second of your bill, did you want
to? Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I've talked to both administration people and some of those people that have concerns about this, and I agree that we need more time to discuss this too, and my concern is that we don't have program silos, but we really are serving the people. That is the ultimate concern that we have.
So do you want to move to lay it on?
I would move to lay it on the table.
Any discussion? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevailed and sit on the table. Okay, we have a third bill before us, Representative Benson.
Good morning, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, committee.
And also thank you for your graciousness in allowing me to bring this forward again. This is the same bill that we have heard before, and I will be very straightforward in the reason why I'm asking for this to be heard a second time. I would like it, if it's possible, to become as close to a stand-alone bill as we can achieve, and kind of an insurance policy in a way. In case during a conference with the Senate it somehow gets lost or eliminated. I just feel that this is such a critical issue that the members of the House of Representatives and the Senate and the Governor ought to face this question directly without equivocation, and that's the purpose.
Just remind people what the bill actually does, if you would, please.
The bill appropriates $1.5 million in 2009 for food shelf programs. And we heard testimony that need for additional food assistance has grown by 45% this last year in the state of Minnesota. We know that purchase of food, the cost of food is escalating rapidly. And this affects not only the poor, but also those organizations that are attempting to fill this food gap. And it's just my view that if the state has any responsibility, the fundamental responsibility of seeing that children are not hungry in the state of Minnesota or their families should be and ought to be the primary responsibility and concern.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, the dollar amount that you have here, is that a number that you've gotten from someplace, or you just picked out of the air? Or the
no, I did not pick it out of the air. It came from recommendations of a number of civic organizations who are directly tied to trying to provide the food resources necessary to keep the food shelves moving. And it is basically in line with the 25% increase in demand that we've seen in this last fiscal year. The other issue, if I might mention, having to do with the resources, and we all know that we're facing a fiscal challenge, is that if the state is able to use some of the rainy day funds for other things, then I believe that also has the ability to tap into that fund for this emergency. And I make no apology for that.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Benson. Do you know what was funded last year for, in the last biennium for a food shelf? And do you, second question to that follow-up, is do you take in-kind contributions like where a farmer or someone who raises vegetables or things like that would make a donation, would there be some kind of a credit for them to have on their taxes as far as, because it's their livelihood?
I'm not sure what the tax code is on that, frankly. I do know, and we heard from the testimony when this bill was heard last time, that all those types of activities have been and continue to be a part of the mix for finding resources sufficient to meet the demand.
Do you know how much it was from last financial?
I believe it was approximately $1 million, was it not, for all funds? Yes. Which has been the same amount for, I believe, several years in a row now. No increase.
Thank you, Mayor.
It has not been in the governor's proposal at all. This has come from the legislature.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not speaking against the bill, but I'm just kind of curious. Do we know what the Commissioner of Human Services is required to cut? Everybody's been asked to cut, what, 3 and 4% from their budgets. So if they're going to go through a, you know, X million dollars cutback, and then this is mandated, what's the net effect of that on their entire program, and will it not make them force them to change some requirements of funding and other programs? Do you have any idea of the impact?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. To me, what we're providing here is, in a sense, new money, one-time money for the emergency we're facing now. I don't know what the impact would be on that particular department, but we have an emergency here, and I'm very open about this and suggesting that this may not come from other programs, but come from the Rainy Day Fund. I just feel that it is a small enough request that it is well within the bounds of that fund. The governor's proposed drawing on it, and he was not drawn to the point where we would be in danger, I don't believe. He's drawn down a small amount more to see that we do not have hungry people on the streets.
Madam Chair, I understand it's a one-time appropriation, but it also becomes part of their base appropriation going into 2010 and 2011. That being the case, it's a $3 million commitment today, and it has a continuance going out two more, so it could be a very large number. And I'm just, my concern is when we start mandating appropriations like this, at the same time the commission has to bring their entire budget down, you know, it's a toothpaste tube, and so you're squeezing at a different end. And I'm concerned about their being here, maybe they are, to talk to it, just so we understand what we're doing.
Yeah, we have some people here who could answer
the question. Madam Chair, I would, and Representative, I would respond in one way, and that is that the legislature has the responsibility, I believe, when we discuss the issue of whether there's inflation or not, the argument that it ought not to be considered rests on the notion that the legislature will review all programs to see if they're appropriate and whether the appropriations are necessary at the level they were in the past. I'm simply arguing there is such a thing as inflation. We know that it has gone up 45% as far as demands for these foodstuffs, and what the situation will be in another calendar year, we have no way of knowing. We're hopeful that the recession will have gone away, or at least it won't be as severe, and at that time possibly the need for this appropriation will no longer exist at the level it is now. So I just feel that the legislature can make those decisions next year. I don't believe that we're frozen in time forever. I hope not. I wouldn't think any legislative body should operate on such a notion as that.
You and I don't have that much time to freeze.
That's true.
Okay. Madam Chair, Connie Green, Department of Human Services. The legislature established the Minnesota Food Shelf Program in 1992, and the appropriation is $2.556 million for each biennium since that time. It is in the governor's base budget, and at this point in time, I'm at a very, very much lower level, but we don't anticipate that Human Services cuts the programs, but rather cuts that we're expecting might be in the administrative area. We've not heard anything about a cut to a program.
Okay. That, Madam Chair, that affirms the request. We can keep going without any problems.
Most of my questions were answered. I guess the one question that I have is historically, what has happened when we've seen this kind of a spike in need out there? What's happened to the other sources for food shelves from the nonprofit, has there been a ramp up in that arena to address the need as well? I guess I'm just kind of curious. And then that's one question. The follow up question is what would this appropriation do in terms of the ability to meet the projected demand out there? How many more families would be able to access, you know, some help from a food shelf if we would pass this appropriation?
Chair and Representative Eastman. In the past, private philanthropic organizations, churches and so, have been able to meet the need. They approached me and suggested that because the demand is growing so rapidly, that they do not feel they're able to meet these demands at the present time. And that's the reason I was approached about this additional appropriation. The second part of your question...
How many families do you think would be served with this appropriation as opposed to if it wouldn't happen?
Madam Speaker and Representative Eastman, I can't give you a number on the families, but this appropriation would, we estimate, keep the support which had been in place last year at the same level. This is simply to be able to keep up with the increase in demand. Now, I'm not sure there's a representative. I did not ask them to come back since we had discussed this at length earlier on this very same bill. But I can't think of any organizations that are more efficient with a resource that has been the food shelves. I just have confidence that they are expending the resources they're receiving from all sources, including the state, in the most efficient way possible. And they are simply at the point where they no longer can meet the demand, and that's why this appropriation, I feel, is an urgent one.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that, and certainly the need is is getting larger, is growing. There's no question about that. I guess the issue that I have a little bit of concern about is that there is a tension between what government provides and what we're able to provide through our local nonprofit churches and other local organizations. And it seems that sometimes this is just a perception of my own, but I believe it's true. That when government steps up and takes a lot of the responsibilities, and the pressure is released from some of the local organizations who would normally step up to the plate and do that. And so I think I don't know how increasing the funding from the government, from the state at this point, affects that. And that would be something that I'd be interested in knowing and understanding, because I think this is an area where people are truly best served when the communities they live in step up to the plate and provide those needs. I just think that is the best way to solve this problem. Doesn't say the government doesn't have a role here, but I'm saying it would be interesting to know the relationship that occurs of the ability for local food shelves to work hard to try to get local contributions. If that diminishes when government steps up to the plate, or if there's any kind of a relationship, I think there's a healthy tension that exists there, and we both need to be playing our appropriate roles. It'd just be nice to know that we're not getting ahead of the curve on that issue.
Mr. Speaker, and Representative Eastland, the point I think is well taken. I would just indicate that when this bill was heard last, the organizations that are engaged in this activity indicated very clearly that donations of food and money have been dropping fairly significantly. This has created an additional strain on them in spite of all their fundraising activities. I would say, historically, I think one could argue that when the church, when religious organizations were totally responsible for welfare, it did provide those organizations a real additional reasons for existence, and it was a unifying factor in communities, the church. It was the social welfare organization for centuries in Western civilization. And I do agree with you that government overextending itself in these areas of social welfare can weaken the role of organized religion and community. But in circumstances such as we had during the Great Depression, or hopefully not now, but during times of recession, charitable organizations, the churches and others, simply are not able to meet the crushing demand. And I think we are approaching that situation right now in regard to food shelves. But I do agree that private charity ought to be the first recourse and not government. So you and I agree on that. I think we may see it differently as to the immediate need at the moment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Eastland, I want to say I don't think there's any tension at all between what our churches are doing in our community and what we're trying to do here with our state government assistance. Yesterday, as part of the Religious Legislative Coalition, the Lutheran minister from La Crescent, who runs the food shelf for the La Crescent community, was in my office, and I can tell you that he would be more than happy to have every single dollar he can get from the state of Minnesota to assist him, because they're just constantly running out of food by mid-month, and, it's just... And La Crescent is probably the most affluent community in my district, and... The increased demand for food assistance is unbelievable. It's just, and he said this repeatedly. So, I don't think, Representative Eastland, there's any tension, at least not in my communities.
could respond to that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Shumpert, I think you misunderstood my use of the word tension. I'm not saying that there's any misunderstanding or any conflict between the organization. I just say there's a tension that exists in how we fund things kind of in general. And if we increase funding here, it's going to have an effect over there. That's the tension that I'm talking about, not a response or a reaction between organizations here. I'm just talking about more of a upper level tension that exists in finding the dynamic that works, you know, for funding, so it works. But that's just a clarification.
Okay.
Thank you. Madam Chair, President Benson, or maybe the department can answer my question regarding the in-kind contribution. Have we ever done this in the past where in-kind contributions were acknowledged through the food shelf, whereby farmers or fruit producers, horticulturists, or vegetable gardening stuff would bring their goods into, and there was a receipt given or some kind of deal where a tax credit was given to these individuals? Just to maybe increase, as Mr. Representative Benson just said, there's a decrease in this happening. Maybe there's a way to give an incentive to those who grow vegetables and fruit out there.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative, the food shelf usage, just to give you kind of a sense of it, distributed about 42 million pounds of food last year. And the Department of Human Services provided, through the legislature, there's about $1.3 million in state legislative funds. And we also, provide and pass on to the food shelves food from the Emergency Food Assistance Program. Used to be called the cheese giveaway. People remember it that way. Now there's not any cheese, but there's a lot of other food. And that's about 5 million pounds of food through USDA, through the department. The local organizations make up the balance of that, up to this 42 million pounds of food. So there's a tremendous contribution already at the local level. The increase in usage went from 396,000 to 576,000 visits during the period 2000 to 2004, and it continues to go up a little bit more. When the local organizations are 501c3s, they do get credit for their contributions that way. So I'm not sure about any additional tax kind of credits or anything like that, but when one does make contributions to 501c3s, you do get credit as far as income tax and other kinds of tax, the way any kind of a contribution to any charitable organization might occur.
So, Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. There is a receipt given then to the individual brings in, or the farmer or the producer who brings in by the 501c3, so they can use it for their tax purposes.
Okay. Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
We get a lot of discussion on this bill. It's kind of like a new hearing.
I
just want to say I think this is good, because when Representative Benson, if this bill does end up going to the floor, we hope the whole committee will be behind it. So
I think where I was kind of going with my discussion, it's related to what Representative Anderson was saying, is I know we talked about this issue earlier, and I believe I made a comment about how if there are ways we could access more of the waste food that's already in our food stream, and if it could be done through some kind of credit or whatever. Since that meeting, I've actually met with my Walmart store in Cambridge, who has they're the largest grocer in my town, and I asked them if they could look at what it would take from our standpoint, from government, to be able to make them willing to make the food. They do participate to some degree in the local food shelves, but I mean there still is a lot of waste in the food stream that they just dump. And I said, what would it take to make you willing to go the extra mile so that food could be made available to the to the food shelves and others who would have a need for that? And he said he was going to look at that and really see if they could come up with some kind of an answer. And I think, in my opinion, that gets at the tension of where government has a role and where the private sector has a role. And if government can facilitate the private sector to take ownership of this, I just believe we're better off, rather than just for government to step in and put the bill. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from. And I appreciate what you're doing, because the need is there, and we don't have time at this juncture to, you know, implement some kind of a tax credit or this or whatever it's going to take. But I think in the future, in the long run, in the big picture, we waste more food in this country than a lot of countries produce. And if there would be a way to capture that, and if we could facilitate the private sector to be able to capture that so it could be consumed by people, it would go a long way, if not all the way, to solving this problem of hunger. And I just think that's a better long-term way to address this issue, even though I certainly understand what you're doing, and I think the bill is addressing a need that we have out there that is critical and needs to be addressed. So I just encourage us to think in a bigger picture of how we could solve this problem permanently, other than just putting more government money into the system.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Eastman, I think what you're suggesting is perfectly reasonable and ought to be an emphasis we ought to work on. And I don't know if there is anyone here in this committee who believes that somehow government is the answer to all these problems. I certainly don't. And it reminds me of some of the discussion that we had last time this bill was heard. And we should always acknowledge, for example, some of the major food-producing companies here in the Twin Cities have historically made very large, significant, ongoing contributions of food. But you remember there was also discussion about labeling, for example, or mislabeling, which had gone on, and that those food shelves would get the benefit of that. I mean, that those materials would be, lots of things would be sent to the food shelves, but now they've gone, we have these dollar stores, and much of that production now is either been eliminated because of more careful technological labeling, you know, of food shelves, of foodstuffs, and also these dollar stores are able to market these products, which would have gone to the food shelf system before. Which isn't all bad because the prices are lower, and so people who are, you know, stretched pretty thin can go and buy things there. But it has caused a major problem for this food shelf distribution system. So I see this as a one-time thing, as Representative Peterson has mentioned here. We should look at this as a one-time thing because we do have an economic emergency in this regard right now in Minnesota, throughout the state, and that's why I'm interested in emphasizing this at the present time.
I was just in Coburn's the other day, and I was looking for a sweet potato chip. And I know a lady who likes them, and I thought, well, I'll get a bag for her. And the lady said, who manages that area, she said, I just threw out two cases. And I said, you got to be kidding me. No, well, she said, when we have sales, they sell. But when we don't have a sale, then they sit on the shelf and nobody buys them. And I said, so I come in a day late and I don't get any. And you throw a whole two cases away. So, I mean, to me, that's a waste of food. Because I think I've got stuff in my cupboard that's beyond the date that it says on the bag, and I'm still eating it. And I think there's a case that's for grocery stores and bakeries and other things. I mean, I can remember, I have to go back 15 years, not even that, for day-old baker goods were still being sold as long as it met the criteria of the food department on the federal and state level. To me, I think we've already talked about it, a lot of waste, but there's an ideal opportunity for food that could have been used to be given at least a receipt to somebody, and I don't know why they aren't doing that, but that's beside the point.
President Benson, sounds like you got lots of help for another bill.
Yes, Madam Chair. I would just like to say I think this would be a wonderful opportunity for bipartisanship to work on these suggestions that have been presented this morning. I would really be excited to move in that direction, that's for sure. I just would like to emphasize that we're facing a food shelf crisis at the moment, and these other proposals, which I think are very, very worthy and ought to be pursued, will not deal with the problem we are facing today. Someone will be hungry this noon, and tonight, and this weekend, and next month, and none of us will be able to ameliorate that situation in the short term. But in the long term, I think we ought to be working on it. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very sorry that it's taken more than the 3 minutes I had proposed.
Nothing to apologize for. It's what the committee's for. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's been a good discussion. I think there are a lot of solutions that we need to go after here. I agree that, you know, if there is a short-time need, that this bill addresses it, but it kind of goes beyond that. So, Madam Chair, I'd offer an oral amendment here. On line 1.7, put a period after 9, and then delete line 1.8. So it does not become part of the base, but it gives us an opportunity, it gives us some time to say, hey, some of these options that we're looking at may be something that we want to incorporate into, you know, our policy. If we have a one-time need, let's address this one-time need, but let's not make it part of the base.
Okay, can you give that to me again?
Yep, and that would be
staff can get that.
On line 1.7 after 2009, put a period, and delete line 1.8, which basically just says it does not become part of the base, but I think as we have put in some of these suggestions and we go after some of these suggestions, I think it maybe gives us an option to say, hey, there are other resources we can go to. And it addresses the immediate need, which is, you know, making sure those funds are available for this year.
President Benson, you want to give us your thoughts on that?
Being a freshman, I would like to have an opportunity to speak with my chair for a moment on this before I make a response, if I may.
May I approach the bench?
Sure. Okay, I'll take a 2 minute recess here.
You know, if you'd 2 minute recess.
This is one of these discussions. Everybody has it. Nobody's just saying that. We can just
Good evening, Representative Shumpert.
Madam Speaker, I was just doing some quick calculations. $1 billion in a $35 billion budget is about 3%, I believe.
No, okay.
There again. $1 billion in a $35 billion budget is about 3%. So $1 million is 1/1,000th of that. So we're talking about 0.0003%,
something like that.
Billion, a billion and 35 billion,
3%.
We're talking about 0.0003%
of the biennial appropriation. I think we can afford to add that to the base budget.
All right.
That would be my argument.
All right. Have we got anybody clear about what the amendment is?
Madam Chair.
Representative Benson?
In the spirit of bipartisanship and the hope that we can work in the future on these issues that have been discussed this morning, I will accept the amendment.
Okay, so.
In spite of the zeros.
I think we actually do need to accept. We do need to vote on the amendment. So all those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
No. Okay. The amendment is incorporated into the bill. So now the bill is before us. House File 3988. Any further discussion?
Amber. No,
never mind. We got Representative Benson renews his motion.
I don't like that one.
House Bill 3988. We recommend it pass and go to finance. Where from there we'll go to.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No? Must be there.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee colleagues.
Great. Members, that we have invited Representative Jeff Kusky to come and talk with us this morning, and if he wants to come up to the chair here, that'd be great. Just so you know, Representative Jeff Kusky has a bill that has come to our committee, and my staff has been working diligently to try to figure out if there's any.
Oh, but I made it.
If there's any way to have resources for what his bill deals with the flood. So this is a courtesy discussion today. The bill isn't actually before us, but it could be if we needed to be in the future. We, our finance committee, we're not at the end of our time that we can consider bills. So, President Kusky, why don't you lay out what your idea was, and we have, I've asked Ms. Orr to come here from, there's two agencies that Representative Kusky says there may be some resources. There's one is the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and the other is, DEED. DEED is not here at this point, but, we are going to be talking later with them, and, take it from there. So, Representative Kusky, give us your best shot on what you're concerned about here and your idea, and then we'll hear from the Housing Finance Agency.
Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I think probably all of us remember the flood of August 18th and 19th of last year and the ensuing special session that took place on September 11th when we appropriated $157 million for flood relief in southeastern Minnesota. If you will remember that, there was discussion throughout that special session, and the discussion was very plain throughout. We tried our best to remove any barriers that would limit the disposition of this money, and it's getting out to flood victims and getting out to people who needed help. We wanted to get it out quickly, and we wanted to remove inhibitions. That was the theme throughout. In the committee meetings and also through the discussion on the floor that one long late day. As the bill was passed, which again was the fastest and largest disaster relief bill in the history of Minnesota, we went then, of course, into the mode of getting this money out to the flood victims in southeast Minnesota. $16 million was appropriated or dedicated to in the bill for housing flood assistance for people that have had their houses damaged by the flood, which I'm trying to remember the numbers. I think we were in upwards of 3,500 houses that were flooded one way or another, and of that 3,500, I believe 1,500 or so eventually applied for SBA loans. I don't remember. Is Tommy here?
Here, we're going to have her come up. And
okay. She may remember exactly how many received FEMA assistance too. But the first thing on the housing side, again, $16 million in housing assistance dollars, $35 million in business assistance dollars, and as you would expect, a lot of money dedicated to public assistance in roads, bridges, sewer, those types of things. Some money for Whitewater State Park and a variety of other needs. As the process began, actually FEMA began its work before we met in special session. They were out going around house to house evaluating damage of some of the furnaces and other types of main components of houses that are their first priority, and they're the indicators by which they make their decisions in helping people out with funding. Those limits were $28,200 per household as FEMA came around if the damage reached a critical level of damage, the most a homeowner could receive is $28,200. And of course, those with less damage receive some fraction of that $28,200. Flood actually began within, I think, probably a week or two of the flood. FEMA was already on the ground out there working. And then, of course, we had a special session. And then shortly after that, we had both on the housing side, the housing relief side, I'm talking about the state money now, and the business relief side, we had the respective agencies, being the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and indeed rolling out their particular programs for administration and disposition of these funds throughout the flooded area. The first thing that I noticed, at least on the housing side, the program that was initially rolled out included a household income limitation of which would have been in Winona County about $81,000 per household. So if you would have made over $81,000, you could not have even applied for the housing relief money, which was called the Minnesota Quick Start Program. I had had discussion with the governor's office, and thankfully they did remove that limitation, because we had explicitly in the language removed the need for any income sort of limitations for administration of these funds. And so they did remove the language, the agency removed them, and began or completed and continued the rollout of the Minnesota Quick Start Program. What remained in terms of the... this is a tough room to look at, everybody.
This is our usual room. We're in a smaller one today.
What remained underneath that in terms of the Minnesota Quick Start Program was a program that told folks, okay, what we want you to do is we want you to go out and apply to SBA. Now, SBA, as probably everybody knows, the Small Business Administration, part of federal government that not only helps businesses in disasters, but they also provide loans for homeowners who've been damaged. And they were required to go to SBA, fill out the loan application, which, by the way, this is a good thing, because what SBA does inherently in that process is they do an overall evaluation of the damage to the house and come up with a dollar amount of, you know, how much is this person out because of the flood. So that was valuable in the process itself. And actually, suggestions for the future that I've heard is that same thing happened on the business side as well. But so SBA, the folks were asked to apply to SBA. They did. There was a deadline put in place by Minnesota Housing Finance. It said, apply to SBA by this deadline, and after that deadline, we will let you know whether or not you qualify for any of the state money, the Quick Start funds out of the $16 million pool. After that deadline, then there was a continued rollout of the program, and underlying that was the fundamental part of it was that if a homeowner qualified for an SBA loan at that point, and Tanya can explain in more detail, but if they qualified for the SBA loan, they were expected to take out the SBA loan from SBA, and if they did not take out the full amount that was qualified to them by SBA, and they would not, definitely would not qualify for Quick Start money for state housing assistance relief through the flood relief bill. So those people who had good credit and paid their bills all their life, probably paid taxes all their life, needed the government to help them in one time of need, at that point was told, I'm sorry, you don't get any state money. And the state money, by the way, that was and has been offered to flood victims that didn't pay their bills on time prior to the flood, that for some reason didn't qualify for an SBA loan, which the threshold for an SBA loan is, I would expect, lower than what the threshold is for a local bank. Those folks in the first round of the Quick Start program were offered up to $23,000 of forgivable loans as long as they lived in the place for 10 years or more. So that money to them, up to $23,000, is free. We got to about Christmas time, and it became very evident at that point that the initial projections or whatever used by Minnesota Housing Finance didn't provide for the full consumption of the $16 million under the program that was developed. So, at that point, I appealed because I have been hearing, and I expect Representative Shumper has been hearing the very same things, because many of the folks in Rushford have also contacted me. People were outraged because they truly felt they were being discriminated against by a state government that offered flood relief, but only offered it to a certain segment of the victims that were victimized by this natural disaster. I should back up a little bit. Back in, I believe, Madam Chair, November, this committee, or a portion of it anyway, came down to Rushford and listened to some of the citizens from Rushford and Fillmore and Houston and Winona counties, and heard very loudly the frustrations of those same people. And it was over and over again. For those of you there, I represent Nightmare. Get going, he says. but you didn't meet him, Danny. heard very, very clearly from folks that there is a very high level of frustration. I would estimate 80% or so of the people, maybe 90%, were very frustrated, maybe 100%. I don't know. It was a very high percentage of people were frustrated with the design of the program. And the fact that they were not going to be able to participate. Anyway, we got to the end. We got to Christmas, and the first of the year, it was evident that maybe less at that point, less than or maybe about half of the $16 million was going to be used up. I encouraged Minnesota Housing Finance to consider the other group of people that hadn't gotten any money. They instead came back and said, you know what? We're going to offer twice as much to that same group again. We're going to raise it from $23,000 to $46,000 that they could get, and we're going to continue to tell their neighbors no. And so that is the design of the program. The deadline actually is today. So I passed around a spreadsheet that the Minnesota Housing Finance have provided to us. They are projecting within their accounts that there's about $3 million that has not completely been spent yet. Some of those applications are in process. There's some speculation that there might be some more applications coming forward. I talked to the HRA director in Winona County yesterday, and he projects rather than $3 million, he projects about $1.5 million to $2 million as of yesterday that he expects. Will be encumbered from those that come in by the deadline, which is today. So it's unclear. There may be some more money left in here on the housing side, but on top of that, I've been in close contact with the individual Kevin Kelleher, who chose the Minnesota Flood Relief Task Force, and he is really directing a lot of, maybe all of the operations in southeast Minnesota related to the flood. And he suggests there's a good share of money left and unaccounted for on the housing, or on the business side. If you remember in the flood relief bill, I'm going faster, Dan. If you remember in the flood relief bill, there was written in there the ability to transfer money laterally from one account to the other. And there's a variety of accounts. We don't know where those are going to come out. My bill, and it might not be a perfect bill, but it is an effort to say and direct and say, we want money that's left over to go out to those folks who have housing damage, who have not been able to receive it to this point. And so that's really where it's at, Madam Chair.
These are the questions, Representative Mullen, and I'd like to ask them, so if you could come forward and...
Madam Chair? Thank you. I'm trying to understand what you're telling us. I think you're saying you objected to the eligibility requirement, income eligibility requirement.
I
objected to that. Is that?
You know, when I called
Representative Moe, and then I. Representative Peterson's going down the same road I have.
Okay, let him go first. And then we'll get back to Moe. I'm sorry.
So what you're saying is that the eligibility needs assessment requirement you're objecting to, and that there's money left over, so that should go through that ceiling. Is that what you're saying?
I'm trying to understand you, Representative Peterson.
Yeah. What your request is.
Yes. My request is that we direct the agency as a legislature and let them know that we would like them, for any money that is left over at this point, to go to the people that they, through the design of their program, made ineligible.
Because of the... Okay. I'm thinking maybe they're going to tell us that.
This is a very hot topic in this area.
Let me just tell you, the chair and our staff, we've done a lot of research on this, and we're going to try to get... We have one agency here today who can talk, the other can't be here until later, but that's why this bill is not before us, because we don't have all the information. But we know quite a bit of the information. Representative Moe.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just similar to Representative Peterson's point, so, and Ms. Representative Miskowski, maybe you can just clarify this. So we have $3 million that's in the pipeline now. Some of that might already be encumbered, but at the very least, it's all applied for based on the current rules. And what you're asking for is for the rules to change now, these applications to be halted, and that money that's in the pipeline for these applications to be directed towards a few or however many homes would qualify under new rules that would allow for higher income level eligibility for these grants.
But Representative Moe, that's pretty close. Yeah, the deadline is today for the Quick Start program. So the intent would be that the money that is not encumbered by those applications that come in by the deadline, that the money that's not encumbered as of the deadline through the applications that are received, any that's available from there on out, be made available to people who have not been eligible under the current design.
Madam Chair, so we might be talking somewhere around $1 million plus or minus, which hasn't been won't have been encumbered by the end of this day.
That's correct, Representative Moe. Plus, there's the unknown of those other pots of money out there, the business side, a variety of the public assistance side. Any of those, according to the way the flood relief bill is written, can be transferred over to the housing side. Any of the money that's left in those areas can be liberally transferred.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I'm sure you realize there will be quite a bit of resistance to that from those other potential recipients. Right. Am I missing something here?
I guess I don't anticipate that, Representative Moe, but on the business side, if we've satisfied the needs of the business, the flooded businesses in the district or in the area,
and there's some available,
it can be the balance can be liberally transferred.
You know, what I'd like to do, members, I would like to ask the board to come forward, because I think we're sitting in the back a little bit. We need one of our agencies who's actually got the information. And I'd like to sort of share with you some of what I've learned. And I believe we passed around a document so you have that as a basis. Do you have that representation? I think you have a copy, too. If you don't.
Yes,
but
Madam Chair, that's one I passed around.
Well, we have one from the Marginal Management. You have that one. All right. Well, let's Chair, members, I'm Tanya Orphan, Housing Finance Agency. I have to confess that I feel at a significant disadvantage. I did not realize that this bill was going to be discussed this morning, so I'm going to have to rely on my memory. I didn't bring any of my
files with me, so I apologize if I'm not entirely precise. I think that the important thing is to step back and think about the state's role and the federal government's role in responding to a disaster and how the agency was viewed that as we proceeded in developing a program. The governor, when he certified, when he asked the president for a declaration, is certifying that the natural disaster is beyond the state's capacity to deal with. If it's within our capacity, then it seemed to be our role. So in asking for a presidential declaration, any governor of any state is saying, we can't handle this on our own, we need federal help. The federal help takes the form of FEMA assistance to individuals to deal with the essential functions of their house. So that's provided as a grant to get you back into your house, and not in every room being livable, but the essential functions of your room of your home being livable. So one bathroom, a kitchen. You know, if you've got two bathrooms, too bad. And FEMA's, you know, you live with one. That's what they give you the grant for, and then you move forward. And the federal government's assistance then moves to the stage of the Small Business Administration, which is very confusing, because why would you think the Small Business Administration is how you deal with emergency relief, but that's the system that we have. The SBA makes a determination about whether, based on your entire financial situation, they can loan you money to help you recover from this natural disaster. For some people, the SBA makes a determination that they can loan you money and it will be sufficient to meet your housing needs. We viewed the state's role as, for anybody who didn't get FEMA assistance and SBA assistance to meet their housing needs, the state should step in and fill in the gaps. So that our role was to make certain that as many people as possible had adequate housing. So, in some situations, SBA was able to loan people money at a very favorable rate, generally at 3%, to repair their homes, and that met the needs that they had. Some people, when SBA determined they couldn't loan, they could only loan them so much money, and there was a gap. And so that the gap meant that people weren't in decent and safe housing. And so we believe that the state's role was to step in and fill in that gap. So we said, essentially, I mean, it was a much more formal term, but we essentially said, if you have a gap between what SBA gave you and what FEMA gave you, if you have unmet housing needs, we will try to fill in those unmet housing needs to the extent that we can. And we set the cap of the amount of assistance originally at $23,000, because remember, we were designing this program about a month after the flood. We had sketchy information at best, and basically no information about what SBA and FEMA would be doing. So we didn't know how big the gap was going to be, and we didn't know how many people FEMA and SBA combined were going to be able to assist and meet their housing needs. So we set a cap of $23,000 based on our previous experience. By the end of the year, we were learning that at least half of the people who we had provided $23,000 for that didn't fill their gap. So that meant we had a group of people who FEMA and SBA had helped who had their housing needs met. They were in or had the capacity to be in decent and safe housing. But there was another group of people who, even with our $23,000, still didn't have the capacity to be in decent and safe housing. So we made the determination that it was those people, since it looked like we had additional money available, that those were the people that we were going to help. And so we raised the limit. We have now funded about somewhere between 300 and 400 households. The average assistance is $23,000.
Based on what we knew about unmet needs, about 85% of the people who had a gap after FDA and FEMA would have their gap fully met by the increase to $46,000. Not all, but about 85%. As you can see from the information that I provided Representative Clark, we estimate that we will fully utilize the money that was appropriated given this current program design. We've seen a remarkable uptick in applications since the first of the year. Housing Finance Agency staff stayed after hours two evenings in January and made phone calls to everybody who we thought was eligible, who we hadn't received an application from, reminded them that this program was available, reminded them that of the deadline, and we have seen a number of applications as a result of that, result of those phone calls. We have ads in that were running in the papers in the last 2 weeks to try and get the last few people who haven't applied. We think we have a relatively conservative estimate about the outstanding applications and applications that we know are out there but haven't been received by administrators yet. So, now, this is not a perfect science, and people don't always act the way that you think they're going to act, but we, based on the information that we have right now, we believe that all of this money will be fully utilized. I can't speak for any of the other departments, agencies, and I don't know what their situation is in terms of appropriations, but this program design has resulted in between 300 and 400 households being assisted, getting to the point where they have decent and safe housing, and we think that that was our job. If there was some other role that you wanted state money to be used for, then it should have been appropriated to the appropriate agency.
Thank you, Madam
Chair. Ms. Orr, you've done a great job in working with people in this flood. I think there's just one thing you need to explain here today for Representative Drazkowski's benefit, and that is the concept of the duplication of effort and what kind of difficulties that presented, because I think that that's really at the heart of a lot of the complaints that some people are registering with Representative Drazkowski. So could you do that, please?
Madam Chair, Representative Trumper, I'll try and explain. We wanted to make sure that the state assistance worked in coordination with federal assistance and was not in conflict. So the agency and DEED actually participated in a series of conference calls with the Small Business Administration to make sure that the program design, in fact, was not in conflict with the federal assistance. And one of the things that SBA repeatedly told us is if an SBA loan is, and I'm just going to use an example of it, SBA loan is made to cover the rehabilitation of the first floor of a home that was damaged in the flood. And they've got estimates for $50,000 worth of damage, and there's an SBA loan for that amount. If we, meaning the state, provided assistance of $20,000, an SBA would consider that a duplication of benefits because they believe that they had already provided assistance to make that house decent and safe, so that the state's money would be a duplication of benefits, and they would, SBA would expect to be repaid. So we would be supplanting, is a word that we use in the welfare context, supplanting federal assistance with state assistance, and it was unacceptable to SBA, and we signed a contract with the SBA that said we'd pay it back. They're very concerned about the states. And again, it goes back to this concept of when the governor asks for a declaration, the governor's saying this is beyond the state's capacity. So if it's beyond the state's capacity, and then you come back later and say, we'll put state money in when federal money is available, that's inconsistent. So I know people are very concerned that we not cross that line, because then we jeopardize a lot of federal assistance, not just these SBA loans. So the duplication of benefits issue is one that's can be very complicated. And in a couple of cases, there are a number of cases where we've had families who got an initial estimate, and any of you who've done any remodeling, you know, you get an initial estimate, they start working and suddenly it's 10-20% more. Well, so then we say to families, and families think that they have an unmet need. They have to go through this process of going back to SBA and seeing if SBA will provide them with additional assistance. If SBA won't, then they're eligible for the state assistance because, again, we're trying to get people into the decent, safe housing and provide enough money so that they can do that. But if SBA says, yes, we think you can, we are willing to give you the additional money to make up for that increased estimate of the cost, then that's the assistance they get, and again, they get into decent and safe housing.
Okay.
Eastland, Stevenson, Moe, Anderson, McNair.
Did you get your question before you did, or is this a follow-up?
No, this is for Ms.
Orr, Anderson.
Eastland,
Representative.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me say thanks, Madam Chair, for bringing this forward today. I appreciate your indulgence in that, but I'm just kind of curious. I think there were 3,500 houses that you had initially addressed that were affected by the flood. Of those, how many, and insurance obviously was a factor in this, was not a factor. So insurance was not considered.
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, insurance at least the state program is you have to accept any insurance proceeds that are available to you. But the fact of the matter is, insurance wasn't much of a factor here. We weren't in a 100-year floodplain, and so people didn't have flood insurance. They had a dike or something, and that they thought that would protect them. And so people didn't, for the most part, have insurance, which is a big difference between a flood disaster and a tornado disaster, where most people have insurance.
Representative Severson, if I can add to Winona County, which is part of my house district, out of the hundreds of houses that were flooded, maybe 10 had flood insurance, maybe 20 or 30 were within a floodplain.
Okay. And just to follow up, I think on that, so the program, and I thanks for the explanation on the federal side. I understand the governor declaring an emergency, that the Fed's not wanting to put where the state does. It makes sense. And so I guess my question would be, when we have that gap where there are people that are receiving the initial $23,000, there's still a gap. Does that mean that their first floor with one bathroom is not livable at $23,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, if the FEMA assistance, and I think it's 28, to cover the initial damage or the sort of critical things, if that doesn't bring the house up to a livable condition, and that in this case means not just the essential functions but everything, then the first step is to apply for an SBA loan. And then SBA determines based on your financial situation and the cost of bringing the house back up to its original condition. The SBA determines how much it will loan you. After that, if there is still an unmet need, then that's when the state assistance is available.
I'll have questions later.
Representative Severson, it should be pointed out that that what comes first, the chicken or the egg, or what comes first, state assistance or SBA, was decided by the agency. The expectations of people on the ground, my expectations as a legislator, when I left there that day after special session, was I really expected our state people, whoever they were going to have a rope tied around their waist and tied to the belt loop of the FEMA person who was going around house to house and provide a proportion of the damage done. That was the expectation that people had after we met in special session. The notion that SBA has to come first and then state assistance was one and a decision made by the agency.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond. I was obviously not part of it, of all of the discussions negotiating the special session bill. I can tell you that the practice of the state in the past, and again, it goes back to why we're asking for federal disaster relief to begin with, is the practice of the state in the past has always been to maximize federal assistance and then have the state assistance fill in whatever gaps remain. I did not participate in any discussions with minority leadership, but before about a month, within a week or two of the flood, Madam Chair was on a conference call with leadership in both bodies, majority leadership in both bodies, where we were asked to provide some estimates of what we thought we would need. We walked through, historically, here's the response the state has had for housing. Based on that historical response, here's what, based on the information we know, we think we would need. So, to the extent that anyone had a conversation with anyone at the Housing Finance Agency about how we were going to proceed, we always talk in terms of this is how we have dealt with it in the past, this has always been the state's position, which is to maximize federal assistance. So, I did not have conversations, and nor did the commissioner, with any of you during the special session. I had conversations about particular things, like could we use some of the money for indoor air quality, things like that. But this sort of philosophical thing I thought was already agreed, because that was historically the state's response. That is sort of the premise of the federal disaster declaration. So I would not accept Representative Zaskowski's statement that this was the way, that it was the agency's choice to have the state not come first. Let's see.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Orr, I was curious about, it seems that this bill does two things. The portion which allows for Minnesota Housing Finance Agency to go back and give additional loans or grants to homeowners who haven't met your projected need yet, but also the kind of the, most of the first section of this bill deals with making money available to you which is not encumbered someplace else. Mm-hmm. Do you have any opposition to that portion of the bill?
Madam Chair, right. Representative Mull, we have the special session appropriation has language, and this has been, again, something that's happened at least with the last two major disasters, that the state appropriations have always had language saying that agencies can enter into interagency agreements and transfer money, because we know that we don't really know where the needs are until 6 or 9 months later. So we can't be precise. So we're making a best guess about how the money should be allocated. So we currently have, the state agencies have the authority to enter into interagency agreements to transfer money. Now, at this point, we have been on the receiving end of requests for money as opposed to people calling and saying, hey, we got some money, do you need it? So, for instance, there's a very critical situation with the Department of Natural Resources and potential buyouts. And it's sort of complicated, and there's a timing issue, but the state has to provide, in a lot of cases, the state has to provide a 25% match. And, you know, it's ridiculous to think that Rushford or Goodview is going to come up with that money. So the state's going to come up with the money. So we made a transfer to DNR so that money would be available at the time when we can do the buyout so that people won't be living in places that are likely to be flooded again. So that money has been transferred. DNR didn't, from their appropriation, didn't have the money to do this. Similarly, the Department of Health has had, there are several issues that were identified during the special session. I think there's one other one that's come up since then. Public safety has had some hazard mitigation funds that they needed that are related to housing. All of these things have been related to housing, and we've made them available.
Madam Chair, Ms. Orr, so the portion of the bill, I don't know if you have it in front of you or not, maybe Kelsey can give you. Line from the middle of lines 1.10 through line 1.15, where it says funds that may be transferred to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency by interagency agreement shall be used for disaster housing assistance. That portion of this bill, in your understanding, is already in law and is not necessary.
That's right.
Because I look at this bill and I think that's the part that at least I could support, but you're saying that even that's not necessary to. Will that give you any additional, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Ms. Orr, would that give you any additional leverage, do you think, in your discussions or negotiations with the DNR or other agencies to protect the money you have, or perhaps get some that might be tucked away somewhere in their agencies, or no?
Madam Chair, Representative Lowe, I think that language is unnecessary because it is already current law. I at least have heard Chief of Staff Kramer say, we want you to spend this money. So if I heard it, I suspect other agencies have heard it. So the governor's office has been very clear, the money was appropriated, we want you to use it for recovery efforts. So I'm fairly certain that if an agency has money available, they would be calling around to find out whether there is an unmet need.
Madam Chair, could I? If I could add in, and thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Moe. On the business side, in the city of Rushford, recently two applications were received by the Rushford EDA. One of them didn't exist the day before the flood. The other business didn't have any damage from the flood. $500,000 apiece was applied for. $1 million. And the flood relief law says explicitly under the deed section, for businesses and nonprofit organizations directly and adversely affected by the flood. The agreement being reached with the EDA in Rushford was, in my opinion, reached in a rather hasty way. Was reached without regard to that part of the law. And so I have challenged that in Rushford, and the people in Rushford, the people in southeastern Minnesota are seeing this type of activity, and there's homeowners. I've received, I bet you, 40 or 50 letters, emails, and phone calls over the last 2 months from homeowners, not only in my district, but Representative Chumper's district as well, that are aghast at what's going on here. And the need is in housing relief areas. If I could address, Madam Chair, also before I forget, the duplication issue. I've asked specifically to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency staff, if the state would pay part of the SBA loan off for a homeowner, would that be okay with SBA? The answer is yes, directly from the agency.
Yeah.
So we can do that.
Okay, can you say who you talked to that day, just so when you say, do you know what you're talking about? Madam Chair,
I'm sorry.
When you say you talk to the agency, can you say who you talked to that day?
Trying to remember her name, a good gal.
Madam Chair, if I could explain that a little further. This again goes back to the duplication of benefits. The SBA would view that as a duplication of benefits. They want to be repaid. So if the state pays SBA directly, yeah, they're okay with it because we've taken care of the duplication of benefits issue. We have supplanted, in my mind, and I think in the, and from what I understand in the federal government's mind, we've supplanted federal assistance with state money.
And it's a conclusion that we're paying it.
Yeah.
So just to conclude, unless you're the chair, Sophia. Yeah. Okay. So just to conclude then, and I don't dispute Representative Jaskowski that perhaps some loans or grants have been made inappropriately, but however that money currently doesn't seem to be available. I mean that's been encumbered. And we have another process through that, through the Claims Committee, which is something we dealt with last night. But the legislation that's in front of us doesn't allow for that money to be again made available. I don't understand how that money that's been currently allocated now all of a sudden would be available for homeowners. And I guess furthermore, I don't agree with the premise that these should not be need-based loans. So I'm going to oppose the bill, even though I'm glad that you're doing your best to represent your district and provide some assistance to them.
I might just mention that we're going to have a conversation until we get a little more information, and we only have one agency represented here because it was kind of short notice.
Specifically to this, I think the one thing.
If I'm the area, I'm going to just go a little bit out of order here, and
represent. Now, I'll make it real clear. The one thing I think that Representative Jaskowski isn't making clear here is that the Quick Start money is a 10-year forgivable loan, so everyone wants it. Okay, and a lot of people who qualified for the SBA loan, and as Commissioner Orr has said, they are obligated to take that money first to meet their needs. They're looking at this and saying, why do I want to take an SBA loan for 20 years at 3% when I should be able to get a Quick Start loan that's a 10-year forgivable loan? And that's where the tension is occurring. People want to, even though they're qualified and have qualified for the SBA loan, want to instead take the free Quick Start money. And frankly, you know, a lot of us raised that issue in October, and Commissioner Nord and I talked about this. It would have completely undermined this disaster relief effort. There's at least, the last time I looked about a month or so ago, there's $35 million of SBA money in this disaster relief already. We only had $16 million of Quick Start money to start with. If we'd have put the Quick Start money in front of the SBA money, it'd have been gone and we'd been sitting there, and SBA would have said, sorry, we don't do things like that. You've put your money ahead of us, put all of your money ahead of us. And we'd have been sitting there with about $30 million of no money.
Madam Chair, Representative Jumper, it should be pointed out that that some of these folks who are being asked to take out SBA loans, I've got letters from them, I got three of them here, and I haven't saved all of them. Some of them are 70 and 80 years old. Some of them have one or two existing mortgages on their property already. It doesn't take long to do the math and figure out where they're at and why they aren't taking those loans out.
Okay. Next is Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. I think it's really good. Thank you very much for letting us have this discussion today. I think it's really important.
For those members that weren't able to attend the hearing in Rushford, I think this is a really important follow-up. And, Madam Chair, I hope that we can extend this discussion next week or sometime, because there's agencies that are not here that need to be here. When we had the hearing in October, Representative Shumper made the statement to a number, hundreds of people in the audience, that he was going to help them. And Representative Jaskowski, you supported that effort, and the Chair and I support that effort too. Assistant Commissioner Orr, I don't know what's going on, but we asked in October why there was so much money in the business fund and it wasn't being used, and we were assured by the agencies down there that we were doing our best to make it work. There was hundreds of people in the audience who had unmet needs, and I don't really want to get in the fight about the logistics, because Assistant Commissioner, I think you are doing a fantastic job of working in the midst of a bureaucracy that is mind-boggling. The gist of it is, I believe there are people down there in their homes that we could help more, and we disproportionately, unfortunately, when we met in special session, didn't do our job right. We put too much money in one fund and not enough money in the other, and gave the agencies the flexibility to move the money around, and I think that we have met needs reaching out to fill this business fund, and we are stretching the words. Representative Drazkowski, it says if they've been impacted. Well, I can tell you there's businesses in Hastings that have been impacted by that flood. So they meet the criteria. I can just tell you that $1 million could do a lot better to the people that were sitting up in those rows that had really significant stories to tell. And Madam Chair, we need the people that are holding that business money and working so hard to distribute it, instead of giving it to Assistant Commissioner Orr's department or the DNR, if they really deserve it, to help those people, wherever it goes. I want to know why, when we asked in October, there was millions of dollars in that fund, and they said, no, we're going to use it. And now I hear stories about there still being that money in the fund, and it's, I think, stretches to use it. I think, Madam Chair, we need to have the discussion why that money's not being moved around for the people that were in the auditorium. I don't want to get in. I believe, Assistant Commissioner, you are working. Representative Drazkowski, it's troubling when they have to get the SBA loan and then get the quick start. We have to get over it. I'm sorry, Representative Shumper, you're right. I mean, it's frustrating that that's the system. But I believe there is unmet need, Madam Chair, that we could help these people, and we're stretching one fund at the expense of who we really should be helping. And I hope we can get these people in here to cut through all the, you know, this is not a partisan issue. We want to help these people, and I don't want to stretch some, help somebody else just because we put, what did we put, $16 million in one and $17 million in the other, but we gave you the flexibility to move it. And you're fighting with another agency, Assistant Commissioner, and you're biting your tongue and doing the best job you can, and I'd like to have the other Assistant Commissioner here and try and defend how they are. If they didn't give this $1 million away, who gave it away? Because somebody should stand before us and tell us what's going on.
Well, let me just comment. I am going to be meeting, and I invited Representative Drazkowski right after this, with Assistant Commissioner Moe from DEED. And they have a different story to tell.
Well, we
and yes, we will. And because we have been checking on this ever since the bill's been before us, we've been checking with every fund. We've been taking this very seriously. My understanding is that they also feel that their money has been committed. If there's some questions about that, that's what we're going to have a discussion with the Assistant Commissioner with. And if it's come back before this committee, it will. But at this point, that agency isn't in our committee here, and so I think we've got to start with some good information. I hope we've cleared up some of the information, at least about the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, because I think it is true, as several of you have mentioned, they've been doing their job. It may not be what some of the people would desire, but I'm pretty clear, and I think I've what we've been to today, that they are following the law, they're protecting the state, they're doing what the governor agreed that we would do. And we may need to look at the other parts in the future. You want to wind up, and then I want to one final point,
Madam Chair. I absolutely know that you will take care of those constituents in Rushford that spoke up that were at that meeting, that your interest is in their behalf. So whatever you do in regard to this matter, and now that I understand your meeting with the agency, whatever you decide to do, you have my 100% support, because I know you're looking out for the little ones. And I am not going to question that at all. So if you're satisfied that Dee is doing it right, spending money for business, you don't need to worry about this person questioning.
Well, we're going to get clear on that, Representative.
Thank you.
Thank you for your vote of confidence. Representative Trump, I think you have run the
Well, line. You know, I just wanted to say that, you know, now it's important to keep in mind that there were 50 federally declared disasters last year throughout the U.S. And I talked to the third highest guy in SBA about all this. at length in December. And in not every state where there's a disaster puts together a disaster relief program like we did in Minnesota. In fact, we're quite the exception. Okay, most states just have to get along on FEMA and SBA assistance when they have a disaster. He called up in his computer screen one day when I was talking to him, and he said, you know, you guys shouldn't complain in Minnesota, because I was saying, you know, we've got probably 50% of, this was in early December, you've got probably 50% of the homeowners in our area here that haven't gotten assistance yet. And he said, you shouldn't complain. He says, the national average is 45% of the homeowners end up with a FEMA and SBA assistance. And he said, at that time already, you guys are already at 54%. And I can tell you that we have had just tremendous help and assistance from Lutheran Social Services and Salvation Army by providing these caseworkers. And Ms. Orr arranged to have some additional funding just recently to help hire more of those people. I am convinced that we are already at 90 to 95% of the homeowners being assisted in this disaster, which is mind-boggling compared to what's going on in the rest of the country. I mean, it's just phenomenal what we've done here. And the problem is, it's not perfectly equal for everyone. The homeowners are looking at the MIF money for the businesses. That's 75% forgivable, 25% payback loans. The Quick Start money is 100% forgivable after 10 years. And so when some people have to take out an SBA loan, and that's all they can qualify for because their needs are met with the SBA loan, they look at this and say, how come I got to pay my loan back and somebody else gets a forgivable loan? That's really at the heart of some of this discussion. I don't know, you know, Representative Drazkowski says he gets all these emails and letters. I don't think I've had more than 5 people who have complained about this. And these are people who simply are saying, look, you know, I've worked hard all my life, and now I have to take out a loan, whereas some other people who didn't work hard and didn't manage their affairs and don't have anything, they get a forgivable Quick Start loan. And so it's kind of this, people are complaining that somebody else is getting something that they're not getting. And, you know, frankly, I think we should be so thankful that we get as much as we are doing for the people in this disaster. Not everybody ends up equal. That's the way life is, you know. And so I feel really good about the work we've done. I know for a fact there is no more MIF money left. You know, there are other businesses in the Rushford area that were flooded, that still need some business assistance. The city council made a huge mistake about 3 weeks ago, giving out this $1 million to these 2 companies that weren't affected by the flood. One didn't exist. It's caused a huge uproar. In fact, the city administrator may be voted out of office in the next couple of days because of it. So I think it's important to keep that all in mind. Sometimes things just mushroom for PR reasons, and they don't have much connection to reality. We've done a really good job on this. I'm convinced. So.
Okay. Well, I think if you're okay with where we are today, we're going to get some information we'll have a chance to revisit this, depending on what we find out, if there's some resources that we want to encourage you to move around. So, Madam Jay, there's a minute before you on March. I will work to do that. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And approval of the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those minutes are approved and adopted. Thank you for coming to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We are adjourned. Sorry, I didn't say that.